Welcome back to Central Standard. Thanks for joining us. I'm Gina Kaufman. The Cash Money crew is here. That's Lucas Butchell and David Jackson. They come bearing financial advice, this time pertaining to affording a college education. College is expensive, guys. What percentage of college students graduate with loans these days? I'll start with David Jackson.
Well, you know, it is very expensive these days, and about 66% of all students that graduate will come out with some form of student loans to pay back.
66%?
Yeah, and then you think about the ramifications of that. So you're talking about a young person out there, their first job, they're needing to buy a car, they're needing to buy a new apartment or a house, and you know, they're saddled with this debt that they have to pay. So, you know, it kind of takes some money out of the economy paying back the debt.
How much debt does the typical student owing money graduate owing?
It's between $20,000 and $25,000, but I've run into a lot of students that have $75,000, $100,000 in student loans. So it kind of runs the gamut. And for some people, it's really a big barrier.
Lucas Butchell, how much does college cost typically? What's kind of the range on that?
The range is going to be with a four-year institution, you're probably talking about $20,000 or so on the low end, kind of all in tuition fees and then room and board and all of that, all the way up to somewhere around $67,000 a year is the really high end, either Ivy League or some of the very prestigious liberal arts schools.
So this is tuition, room and board, but there's also sort of a built-in expense that when you're focused on your schoolwork, you might be a little bit limited in how much income you can be bringing in.
Absolutely, yeah. So this is just the cost side. But with most students, there's limited opportunities for employment, either part-time during the year. And a lot of students, it seems like anymore, don't work during the summer to generate additional income to help pocket for the next year.
Why don't they?
That's a great question. I think some of it, and it's been kind of well documented here coming through this economic recovery, that a lot of the job opportunities that typically went to either high school or college, young college age kids are not available because there's people that haven't been able to get jobs that have kind of trickled down into those positions. So that it's been harder, by and large, to get a traditional 3-month summer job.
Is there also some pressure to be getting these sort of unpaid internships in order to qualify for a job when you graduate?
I think the focus on getting experience in your career track is really important, and companies have had the benefit of being able to get these kids to come work for free. I will say, though, that some of it, too, is just trying to take summer hours and catch up. And some of it is just feeling like they need a break from the pressure of school during the year.
So let's just say someone hearing this conversation is preparing to go to college, hasn't made any decisions about what kinds of arrangements they're going to set up for how to pay for it. They've got nothing locked in just yet. At this early stage, what types of loans exist and what types of things do you think they should be looking for, David Jackson?
Well, the first step for all college students or the prospective college student is complete that FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. And you may be surprised that you are eligible for some aid, but you need to find out first, what kind of aid is out there. And then for the typical student, there's going to be a combination of some grants, some student loans, maybe parents' income, and then hopefully you've had some savings from for college too that you can use. But all that gets kind of thrown in the mix to determine, what is the school going to help provide for you and what do you have to provide on your own.
What are the pros and cons of some different types of options that exist when you're weighing your options?
Well, if you could get a grant or a scholarship, that's what you want because that's just basically free money. But, for the typical student, there's not going to be enough of that to cover the entire cost. So then where does the rest of the money come from? And for way too many students these days, it falls back to the student loans. And, it's kind of interesting. One of the conversations we have with our clients typically is don't sacrifice too much your own retirement savings to help your kids with college. But there's that pressure.
Yeah, that's something I'm interested in because there are people, I know people who 20 years out of college, 30 years out of college are still paying off student loans at the same time as they're staring into the face of paying for an education of a child. Like they're paying for multiple generations of education all at the same time. Is there any way that when you're sort of in midstream with something like that, that you can remedy the situation or are you just kind of locked in?
You want to take that?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of things that you can do. The first thing is really being planful with paying back your debt. So there's, you know, most folks when they first get out, they're focused on as getting the lowest payment that's possible. And that may make sense right out of the chute while you're kind of ramping up your income or trying to get your arms around your position. But the thing is, you can pay more than the minimum payment. You can look at converting to a different payment plan at some point once you have the additional income to provide for that. So getting out in front of it as opposed to just paying the minimum every month is something that most folks should consider. And then there's also some fairly new repayment plan options that after 20 or 25 years that the student debt will actually be forgiven or canceled effectively. That's new within the last couple of years, and it's only unfortunately good for most recently issued student debt, so all the old stuff doesn't really get thrown in there. But that's something that moving forward will be an option, is potential cancellation of any remaining balances.
Yeah, I remember reading that the Obamas had just finished paying off their student loans just before he went into office. So that multi-generational issue that you're discussing is real.
How does it affect the macro economy that they're looking into that kind of debt forgiveness down the road?
I think it affects it in a huge way in just the example that I gave you. So you have a young person who should be looking to buy their first house and make that first down payment on their new house and buying a new car. But if they've got a $500 a month student loan payment, you know, that's money that's not going to be freed up to circulate in the economy making these kind of purchases. So there are a lot of students or recent graduates who are still living in mom's basement or dad's basement because they just can't afford to, you know, and it's just like they got to pay the student loan back.
Talk about interest rates. How do those figure into it, and how much control does a person have over the interest rates that they're left with?
The interest rates are going to be vary depending on the type of loan that they get. But if we kind of talk in the federal frame, which is where I would say most students get their student loans, or at least a good chunk of them. You know, the interest rates. This has kind of changed a lot here over the last 10 years. So. You know, parents that were under a prior system are kind of surprised when they get into kind of the new world. But right now, the loan rate is set on an annual basis for the July 1st to June 30th timeframe, and that's set based on an index to a Treasury note plus a certain percent. So that it's a fixed rate, but it's set once a year, if that makes sense. And it depending on if it's an undergraduate loan, a graduate loan, a parent loan, and there are some caps in that. So if and when they get higher, they do get capped out. So there, it won't be, you know, kind of double-digit type loan rates.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman here with the Cash Money Crew. That's David Jackson and Lucas Butchell from the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. And if you have a question for them, for our Cash Money Crew, about paying for a college education and dealing with student debt, give us a ring at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. And so, guys, I'm going to admit a little bit of a bias. I'm kind of an old school person in my feeling that college is more than just a financial investment, that it's an investment in something that sort of exists outside of that. But given the cost of a college education and given that it is kind of intended in, to some people to set the stage for getting a job that can give you money, it's hard to ignore that piece of the equation. So with it being so expensive and with it being so hard to get a job these days right out of college, the question does arise from a strictly financial standpoint, is college worth the investment from a strictly financial standpoint?
And I would like to say in just about all cases, you can say the answer is yes, most definitely. And statistics show that a person who does not complete college, they may make close to $1 million in their lifetime. A person with a college degree will make closer to $2 million, between $2 and $3 million in their lifetime. So the difference, what's interesting, like when I came out of, and I don't want to date myself too far, but when I first came out of college, I remember I got an entry-level position, manager trainee position, and I had a lot of buddies who were working in a factory that were making just as much as I was. And with overtime, they were making a lot more than I was. But I was thinking, you know, big picture, long run, I'll catch up and I'll pass them. And plus, I'm not going to be coming home as quite as dirty as they were, you know, from a hard day's work, just because of the different work. Nowadays, that dynamic has changed. I mean, the person, and there are exceptions to every rule, but typically the person who has a college degree, they're going to make a tremendous amount more money than the person without, because a lot of those factory type of jobs that people were getting back in the day, they just aren't there anymore.
What are your thoughts about this, Lucas Bushell, about the financial investment of college and its ultimate value?
I think the numbers show that it's definitely worth it from a college degree standpoint versus without. I think just the ability to enhance your lifetime earnings, and I think that's all kind of current and past information. I think looking forward, it's going to be even more pronounced, where the people that don't have a college degree or some sort of additional technical training are really going to be left behind, and there are going to be fewer jobs and lower paying jobs and jobs that don't have the opportunity to increase pay. And so I think that's really where the additional education really enhances the experience and your ability to earn a comfortable living moving forward.
So having established what it seems like is a mini consensus on the value of going to college, let's get back to the practical advice on how to pay for it, because it is so expensive. You mentioned earlier that loans are not the only option, that there are grants and scholarships. Do you have any advice to people for how to track those down?
Well, there's a lot of information online, but you need to take the approach of this is a job in and of itself, trying to identify what loans and what money is out there. I've been involved in multiple nonprofit organizations that have had scholarship money to give away, and they couldn't find people to give it away to because the students wouldn't go through the hassle of writing the essay or whatever was required to get it. So there is money out there. So you have to be proactive, number one. And number two, one of the things I really advise my clients is when you have a small child, start saving immediately, even if it's just a small amount to start accruing. You know, I can't explain why college is as expensive as it is. It's more expensive than it needs to be. But you can't, you know, get by in this society anymore without it. You know, as Lucas is alluding to, with the technology changes in our country, most of the jobs are going to require some type of a college.
That's interesting, because isn't the form that you were talking about filling out, the FAFSFA, isn't that based on your assets? And could you see having assets as sort of working against you in that picture?
In some ways, it kind of depends on how it's set up. But you have a person can take advantage of 529 plans and education, Coverdell education savings accounts, where you can grow assets in a tax-free environment. And the biggest penalty when it comes to that FAFSA form is the parents' assets that are not included in retirement accounts and the child's assets that are in their own name. And so some of these products or retirement or savings accounts for children are not going to be in the child's name, so it won't count as much against them.
Interesting. Lucas, what are your thoughts about this? What can people be doing just from the get-go to be doing their homework and finding out, putting themselves in a position to not be totally reliant on loans?
The first step is to get the FAFSA filled out as soon as you can, and then pay really close attention to the scholarship application deadline at the school or schools that you're choosing to either pursue or go to. So many students will miss that early deadline scholarship application, which tends to, it varies, of course, by school. But, you know, be ready and, you know, before February 1st, at least know when they're coming up so you're not missing out on opportunities because you're late to the game. And the next thing, like David said, is really survey your community and look at, you know, small professional clubs, you know, Rotary or even the local utilities oftentimes will offer scholarships. So there's a lot of money available, and there's very relatively few folks that actually identify it and then take the time to apply for it. And, you know, a $500 scholarship here, a $1,000 scholarship there really do add up.
You're talking about 18 to 22-year-olds in a lot of cases who aren't notorious for understanding the long-term repercussions of decisions they're making or the what it means to treat something as a job in and of itself, which, David, you were saying, to treat this pursuit of scholarship money as a job in and of itself. Are there people or resources out there to sort of shepherd students through this process and help show them what that means to treat it as a full-time job?
there's a lot of resources online. I know it's easy to say that. Financialaid.org is a really good one. It really breaks down all of the different types of aid, scholarships, grants, but also then different student loans, and you can get all kinds of details and a really good thought there. I think the high school guidance counselors, a lot of people expect them to do a lot. Some are outstanding and do a great job of helping students navigate that. And also are really aware of community resources. Some are not so much. So I would definitely start with the school, high school, and see if there's somebody there or resources there that can really help you out.
What if someone graduates with the aspiration to pursue a career that, yes, will make them reasonably comfortable in life, but they're not going to be, like, raking it in this particular field they have chosen?
Right.
So what is the advice that you might give to such a person in terms of maybe strategizing how they're going to, over the years, pay this off?
Well, a couple of things I would keep in mind, and one of them is going to a two-year college is a lot more inexpensive than a four-year. So maybe you do your first 2 years at that junior college and then transfer over to a four-year after that. You can save yourself a lot of money by doing that. The other thing is with the new student loans, as Lucas was alluding to, they have an income-based repayment plans so that even if you're not making a lot of money, they're not going to make you pay a huge portion of your salary. So I think it may be, I want to say somewhere between 5% and 10% of your salary would be directed towards your student loan repayment versus, you know, whatever that loan, you know, what it would take to pay it off in 30 years. And then after 20 to 25 years, that loan may be forgiven if you, you know, haven't paid it off by then.
You mentioned junior colleges. Can you talk a little bit more about that option and sort of flesh out what that means practically?
Well, yes, if you do a junior college, you're talking about a two-year degree. It's an associate's degree. And in most states, say like if you go to Johnson County Community College, most of your credits will transfer directly to KU. So you can spend a lot less money going to, say, Johnson County Community College than what the typical credit hour at KU is going to cost you. Plus, you can maybe do it from home, you know, and just commute to school and then get your four-year degree from the KU. So you still have the prestigious degree, but you've only spent those extreme costs for those last 2 years.
Do you think cost of college keeps people from finishing sometimes? And then in a picture like that, you both don't have a college degree and you do have some amount of debt.
Absolutely. I think that can be a factor. And that is probably the worst position to be in,
right,
is you've accrued, you know, a couple years worth of student loan debt. You don't finish college, so you don't have the benefit of the degree and the ability to earn additional income. And so you're saddled with the debt and probably less likely to be able to pay it back.
What's advice you might give to someone who's partway through college and feeling like he or she is having trouble keeping head above water financially to see through this commitment?
There's nothing wrong with taking a semester or a year off, getting a job and really socking a lot of money away for school. Student loans, especially if you're dealing with government loans, you can get a forbearance and basically not have to restart payment on those or start payment on those right away. And really, you know, saving money, making sure you're tracking towards a degree program that you're really interested in. A lot of times I see students that they're struggling with grades because they're not really passionate about what they're studying. And so taking a year off and really trying to find yourself and then coming back maybe a little bit more focused and energized is a great strategy, I think. So it's, don't look at it as quitting. Look at it as kind of resetting, but then commit to go back, because the last thing you want to do is, you know, come with inertia. You stop and then you never go back.
And then there are a lot of employers out there who will also help pay for your college. You know, so if you do have a job and, you know, you're a few credit hours short, you know, just maybe take a few credit hours per, you know, per semester and take the long road, but at least you get to that goal and this company may help you pay for it.
Well, and we've just been talking about advice for those students, but depending on the family, paying for college is a really family effort and family decision. And we've mentioned that there are parents struggling to think about retiring because their kids are still in college. In terms of deciding that, what are the choices people are facing when it comes to dipping into assets to invest in their greatest asset, their children?
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of, well, actually I've seen clients who will dip into their 401k plans or their IRA plans to come up with the money for college, home equity loans or home equity lines of credits where they're borrowing against. I don't typically advise that. I did something interesting in, about a month ago. I advised my own sister, though, maybe you should stop contributing to your 401k just for this year and next year until you get your daughter through college, because she's having to write these big checks. And it's like, well, you know, you'll have to play catch up later. But, you know, now may be the time to stop making those contributions.
So you would recommend putting a halt on actively saving over dipping into savings
that have
already accrued.
Yes,
why
I
is that?
Well, I just think it's a more efficient way to do it from a monetary standpoint. And like I said, that's a rare instance where I've even given that advice. But in her particular case, where she is and the assets that she has, it makes more sense.
I would say I generally have a slightly different view in that tending not to sacrifice for your retirement in order to put more resources towards your kids' college, just because you can borrow, generally speaking, to help fund college, but nobody's going to loan you money to meet your retirement expenses. So you have to be really careful about committing too much of your long-term dollars for college. So there's all kinds of government loans and even private loans from private lenders to go to school. The biggest thing is understanding that this money has to get paid back, and it's going to impact your ability to continue to save for retirement, because you're going to have to commit cash flow to pay those loans back. Especially when parents are borrowing them, it's a kind of a right away starting to make those repayments. So, you know, there's no easy answers.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, borrowing some money, and especially having the kids borrow some money, and really trying hard not to touch those retirement nest eggs makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm almost sorry I said that about my sister. In her case, it made sense. But in most cases, no, you should not sacrifice your own retirement for the kids' education.
It's that's maybe, though, an easier thing to say from a distance than from, like, the emotional perspective of that parent.
Right. That's absolutely right.
How do you talk to parents about being in that situation? And actually, I mean, because it could sound to them like you're recommending a selfish approach or yourself over them, which isn't how people raise children.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like Lucas said, is that there are no loans for retirement. You know, you can take out a student loan, but you can't take out a loan for your retirement. You know, once you reach retirement, that's it. So it is a tough decision.
It's quite possible that if you don't save up that retirement, it's these very kids you're trying to help who are going to be helping you with that.
Absolutely. And I think the one thing that it's not an all or none decision, right? So you can adjust your cash flow a little bit. You can take out some student loans. Some people really like the idea of being able to provide for that. And let's say you haven't done as good a job of saving as maybe you should have. You can still take those loans out and help them pay them over time, or, you know, if you have the resources, maybe help that be a part of the graduation gift, is paying back all or part of their student loans. And it gives you flexibility then down the road to, you know, not commit all of your resources right away to those college expenses.
We just received a call that we don't have time to go for, but we have a caller suggesting that there's a tax deferring option for parents to help their kids in repaying loans. Is that correct?
Read that again, a tax deferring option?
They want to know if there's a tax deferred option for parents to help their kids in repayment.
I'm not sure in repayment. What they may be talking about is like a tax deferred savings vehicle. College 529 plans are an outstanding vehicle for saving. I would encourage parents with little ones, or all the way up to, you know, getting in high school, to really look at that and look to commit your savings in those vehicles. They're very effective from a tax standpoint, and are a nice way to get you going from a college savings standpoint.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Lucas Butchell and David Jackson. They're part of our Cash Money crew, and they join us once a month. It's been fun, guys. See you next month.
Hey, thank you.
And we hope all you college students out there were listening and getting some good ideas. To listen back to today's show or any previous conversations on Central Standard, go to kcur.org/Central Standard. You can also stay current on Central Standard News by following us on Twitter. Our handle is @KCURCST. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Tune in tomorrow for a conversation about the history and possible future of hemp production in Kansas and Missouri. That's it for today. Stay tuned for Up to Date next.